the cannon fodder. Boom, this is our season got underway last night. I'm Mike A-Race with Brian Hedger, reporting from Nashville. And, of course, Patrick Flaherty, the Podfather, is on the controls somewhere in a cave deep below Columbus. We know not where. He does have a butler and a faithful ward. So I'm going nowhere with this. But let us plow into hockey before we go down Patrick's rabbit hole. Hedge, the season got underway last night. I don't know how the Montreal Canadiens blew that game. The Flyers put the wood to the Penguins, although Malkin got me some fantasy points, and so on. Anyway, hockey's here. It's underway. Where it goes from this point, we can't say. It's funny. Last week on our first podcast of the year, of the calendar year, we ended it on with the proviso, we'll see where COVID takes us. And later that day, it was announced that the Blue Jackets were holding 17 players out of practice and the Dallas Stars had shut down their training facility. So that's going to happen again, given the surge where we're at. I'm not asking you for comment. I know you're as careful as I am and sometimes scratch your head at the way life is progressing here amid the very heart of the pandemic. But we'll leave that aside for a second. And as we teased last week, I want to take a look at the division, specifically the Central, the yep. Discover Central, which presumably is named for the credit card and not the verb. And the Jackets have been placed in this realigned division. I'm sure folks know, but just for the sake of background, the divisions were realigned to cut down on travel, and they're going to stay together. Hedge, you've been talking to the players and coaches about this, but one of the more frightening angles about divisional play this year is that that's it. It's all in the division. You're going to play seven teams over and over and over again. Games every other day until the middle of April, 56-game schedule, and no respite. It's going to be both a sprint and a grind, probably like an 800. It's not 100. It's not right. 200. Yeah. And if the regular season is a marathon, what we have here is a really hard 800-meter race where we'll see who's gassed when they after the third lap or whatever. That aspect of it, Hedge, seeing the same teams over and over again, no secrets. I was talking to Daryl Ray the other day, and I wrote a column. And one of his things that he's looking at is he wants to see how the season develops stylistically. He has a fear that everyone's going to play conservatively, just trying to preserve points. Ultra-careful hockey. Just get to overtime and to the next game, you know, the night after next, over and over again until spring comes. What do you think of that notion? And then let's talk about the Discover Central Division.
Well, I would say, how is that different than any other season? You know, I feel like a lot of coaches have gotten to that point anyway, where when you get in the third period, if it's a close game, you get in the last 10 minutes and both coaches are basically playing for a point. So I mean, it is only 56 games. So maybe that heightens a little bit, you know, maybe that becomes a little more the case, but I don't know. I just think you're going to get a lot of, I don't want to say nasty because you don't get that anymore really in the NHL, but you play the same teams over and over and over again. I mean, the odds that, you know, tempers flare and things carry over from game to game, that's going to go way up. I mean, Nick Foligno already said that he's probably going to spend more time in the penalty box this year than, a usual prorated amount, I guess you'd say.
I think the premise of what Daryl Ray was saying was that you're going to know these teams so well, it's going to be impossible to survive, to surprise them.
Right. Well, that's
so
true.
Therefore, okay, they're doing this. You adjust almost without thinking about it. Okay, they're doing that. You adjust without thinking about it. You sit back. You wait for a seam, one mistake, and play very conservatively. Well, we'll see what happens. I'm not going to belabor that. I wrote a little bit about it this morning.
It's going to be – I think it'll be similar to – I mean, you're going to play each team eight times. I mean, there's seven opponents for each team. You got 56 games. You're playing each one eight times, four there, four at your place. That's basically seven playoff series. spread out over the course of a season. In fact, one of them against Carolina, they're going to play Carolina four straight times. I think it's in March, but March. But they're going to play Carolina four straight times at Jack Attar, two there and two at Nationwide Arena. I mean, that's basically like a playoff series right there. So, I mean, how does that change? I mean, I think one thing that'll be interesting is how does that change the coaching? You know, Torts always talks about how they don't really factor in the opponent very much, you know, during the regular season because everybody does different things. Well, now, like you said, there's going to be more familiarity. It's almost going to be like being in the playoffs. So it's going to be like that. So, I mean, is there more opportunity to match lines and know what they're doing and things like that to, you know, take advantage of certain teams?
Here's a notion to kick around here. Brian, you're in a pandemic. The pay is not what it normally is for the players. The season's compressed into a grind with no respite anywhere. There's no spring break, if you will. There's no all-star break. You're a team, you get down 10 points out in early February. Are there going to be some teams that know they're out of it? And the players basically pull the ripcord and say, all right, let's just get the summer vacation at this point.
I don't think there's going to be any teams that outright say that, but I could see some teams, you know, trending in that direction potentially. I mean, listen, when you're playing this many games in the short number of, I mean, it's 56 for the Jackets, it's 56 games in 115 days. That's right. Basically a game every other day. Almost, you know, so the potential for this to go sideways on some teams quickly is there, you know, and if that happens, I could potentially see that happening.
It's another thing to keep your eye on. You know, the flip side of it is if Jackets fans will remember back to the half season of 2013 when, you know, they came from last place to missing the playoffs by a point, and they did it on the back of Sergei Bobrovsky, who won his first Vezina that year. I mean, that's the flip side of what we're talking about, and we'll see how it goes. But that brings up another point, Brian, and you've covered this territory more than once as you prepared for this season and written about it, and that is the advantage of having two goaltenders or a rotation, because I don't know if you can ride a goalie for 56 games over 116 days.
Yeah, no, I mean that you're asking a lot of them physically to play that much. So teams that have two or even three goalies that they're comfortable with, you know, throwing into these games and trying to win games behind, you know, in front of, that's a huge advantage, you know. And when you look at the Jackets, that they're obviously they are comfortable. Either way, with Elvis Merzlikins or Jonas Korpisalo, they've been through a whole season. They've been through a postseason. Both guys have stood up. Both guys have had their struggles as well. But that's to be expected with, you know, goalies going through that. They trust both those guys, you know, limitlessly, basically. They have no idea. I'm sure they have no problem throwing either one of them in there. Matisse Kivalinik's rookie still. He made his debut last year. He's in the taxi squad. And
that was my next question, Brian. And that is, forgive me for cutting you off, but I wanted to get at this a little bit because I need some edification. I need your knowledge because it's something that I haven't looked into very deeply. But aside from being the New York Islanders and using the taxi squad to subvert the salary cap, how does the taxi squad work?
So, the basics of it are you have a 4-6-man taxi squad, and one of those 4-6 guys has to be a goalie. They're putting this thing in this year for this year only as a plan anyway, to help teams in the middle of this pandemic, you know, so if you lose some people unexpectedly, you can call them up. The way it works on a daily basis is like if these guys are all getting tested in the morning, there's protocols, all that stuff. So if you lose a couple players and you need to draw from your taxi squad, you can call them up from the taxi squad, but you have to do it before 5 p.m. Eastern time of the game of game day. Otherwise, you can't call him up unless it's a goalie. I think
geez, five o'clock is pretty late.
it is, but I mean, well, there's still 2 hours usually between that and game time, though. So, like, what if somebody gets sick, you know, in that time and you can't call someone up? I mean, that's kind of weird to me. But I know that I think goalies can be called up anytime. But like, the more important thing is with that is sending them back to the taxi squad. So to put a guy from the NHL roster back to the taxi squad is basically like sending them to the AHL in Cleveland or you know, Rockford or wherever. I mean, it's Cleveland for the Jackets. So they have to, like, if they are waivers eligible and they have not cleared waivers yet, they have to clear waivers to be able to go back to the taxi squad. So that's why you saw a lot of teams right before the season started here earlier this week. They put guys that were going to be on taxi squad on waivers to try and clear them through waivers. Because once you're cleared, I want to say it's 30 days. I keep meaning to look this up, but I think it's 30 days or something. But you basically don't have to clear waivers again after you've cleared them the first time.
So what are we going to see? Does it depend on infections? Or are guys going to be shuttling around all the time?
Look at a guy like Matisse Kivlenix. He does not require waivers, I don't believe, because he's a rookie. So he can go back and forth between the taxi squad as much as they want. So, but what they would have to do, I mean, your NHL roster is still 23 guys, right? So you still have to, if you bring them up, let's just say they bring them up and say, hey, let's give Elvis and, you know, Corpy a day off here. You know, both of them, and let's have Matisse come up and get some playing time in a certain game. Then you're going to have to both goalies are waivers eligible. They'd be snapped up in a heartbeat. So you can't move either of them to the taxi squad to bring Matisse up. So what you do is you'd bring Matisse up, have three goalies, and then somebody else would have to go back. Somebody preferably who has either cleared waivers or doesn't need to clear waivers.
Well, someone will figure out a way to use
and
this.
The other thing is, and you mentioned it earlier about, certain teams trying to circumvent the cap and stuff. That potential is there because a lot of these players, if you have a two-way contract, let's say, and in the NHL, this player makes, $700,000 or $800,000, and in the AHL, they make $200,000. When you're on the taxi squad, it's the $200,000. And, that they would actually be making. And then I believe, it's just like anything. If there's no taxi squad in a regular season and you get a guy through waivers and you send him down, the max let's just say he has a one-way contract, the max that you get charged on your cap is like 900. It's like the max for a rookie player, like 925 or something. So that's all you would get charged if you, let's just say you've got a player who's aging, nobody wants them, they get overpaid, you sneak them through waivers, their cap hit is like 5 million. Well, then you wouldn't be able to, you wouldn't have to pay the 5, you wouldn't have to count the full 5 million on toward your cap. You could count just the 900,000. So it's the same way with the taxi squad.
All right, let's look at this. Someone's going to figure out a way to use it the way it wasn't intended. Totally. That'll be interesting.
Yep.
Let's look at this central here. In alphabetical order, it's Carolina, Chicago, Columbus, Dallas, Detroit, Florida, Nashville, and Tampa Bay. A little bit of everything from the East in this division. And we mentioned it before, a little bit of the old Central Western Division for Jackets fans from days gone by with, Nashville and Detroit and Chicago. The consensus is, and rightly so, especially if you saw Tampa Bay last night play Chicago, is that, and it wasn't even close. I mean, it looked like a scrimmage for Tampa Bay. But the consensus is that the Lightning are going to win this division with ease. And we'll see what happens. It's a crazy season, but they're clearly the best team in the division. You're defending Stanley Cup champions. Now, Hedge, I want your thoughts on this, but I think after that You know, I think it could be after that. You're looking at Dallas, the other Stanley Cup finalists, Carolina, Columbus, and maybe Nashville, and they could finish in any order with the possible. I don't know about Nashville, but which hasn't won a playoff series since 2017 when they made it to the finals. But there's four playoff spots, and I think after Tampa Bay, which is certainly going to make the playoffs, in any order. You can find you're going to find any one of three or four teams. Fair to say, in your estimation?
I think so. I think you could throw Florida into that mix. I don't know if I can't remember if you mentioned them, but I think you. I mean, they. I kind of like some of the things they've done. But Bobrovsky is out to start the season. It doesn't appear to be COVID related or protocols, or whatever, because they sent that list out yesterday. The NHL did, and he wasn't on that one. But he's not starting the season, so I don't know what the deal there is with Bobrovsky. But I mean, I think when you look at them, and they haven't lost any of their talent up front. They've got a lot of talent up front still, and I feel like Bill Zito, former Blue Jackets executive, now GM of the Panthers, I feel like he has bolstered their back end.
He was up for every GM job in the league over the span of five years. Finally landed in Florida. Mike Hoffman and Jenny Dadonoff out, in Anthony Duclair, Radko Gudas, Patrick Hornquist, and Marcus Nutavara.
And Alex Wenberg.
And Alexander Wenberg, yeah.
Yeah.
How can we forget?
Obviously
not forgettable.
They're obviously hoping to get the Wenberg from a few years ago that they actually had like 59 points. And Marcus Nutavara is out as well. That is COVID protocol related. But I think when he comes back, he's a solid defender. If he's healthy, I mean, that's a solid pickup for them, I think. And then they added Radko Gudas as well, who is obviously universally hated for the most part across the league because he's so hard to play against, and he's
dirty is what he is.
He suffers nothing. Like he yeah, you're right. I guess you could just say that. But hard-nosed guy. So and they still have Ekblad. It looked like, from what I saw, from reports coming out from down there, that Yandel was like on the taxi squad or something. I haven't checked back in with that. I don't know if he's going to be playing or not for them right away. But anyway, I think that Florida's in the mix. I think there's like a group of five teams behind the Lightning who are going to duke it out for the next three spots for playoffs behind them. And that's, the Jackets are fully in that mix.
And you begin with Dallas, and you have to. This is the first time since 1980 that the two Stanley Cup finalists are in the same division. And that's hearkening back to a time when the NHL seeded the playoffs without regard to conference. So you could have an Islanders Flyers final from the two teams from the same division at the time. But Dallas was a finalist. It's funny. I had you look at the stats from last year, and we both wrote something about this at certain points and during the bubble last summer. Dallas seemed to be an incredibly similar team to the Blue Jackets if you look at their inability to score goals. They were like right down at the bottom of the league in terms of scoring. I think the difference, Brian, and as we talk about Dallas a little bit, is that they did generate a lot more chances, and they started converting once they got into the bubble. They were like the Jackets, a very staunch defensive team, and unlike the Jackets, they did generate a lot of chances, and they did have a better than average power play, which is a huge difference. I think just like Florida on paper. Looks very good if they can get things together. I think Dallas got things together in the bubble last year, and that's a team to be reckoned with.
Yeah, you got to like what they did in the bubble for sure. Rick Bonus did a great job with them, ended up getting the full-time job there. The thing with them is that they had two key players to have off-season surgeries. Tyler Seguin had hip surgery. He's going to be out until maybe April, they said, like May or March or April. That's a long time. That's most of the season.
Right.
And Ben Bishop.
Yeah.
He had knee surgery, and I think he's going to be gone for until at least a month or so, if not more. So that leaves the goaltending down to Anton Khudobin, who did really well. He played really well in the playoffs. I mean, we'll give him that for sure. But he is a career, kind of a career backup, I guess you'd say. Like, he's more of a back, like a kind of a tweener between a starter and a backup. And then the backup to him now is Jake Ottinger, who's a high draft pick. He's like a second round pick.
Right. But,
I mean, he's a rookie still, obviously. So he's going to have to prove himself. So they do have some, and they're not playing. They don't have Steven Johns, one of their, bigger, better defensemen who, he struggled with like some concussion issues for like serious ones for a long time. He came back in the bubble, played pretty well. He's out. Like, he just is not playing this season. I don't know if he opted out. I don't know what's going on there. So, I mean, they have some holes. If they were returning more people, more of their regular guys, I would have put them with the Lightning and said, hey, those are your top two favorites right there, and everyone else is duking out. But I think because of some of these holes that they have potentially that they got to fill, I think they're dropping right back in the mix with those other four teams.
It's fair to say. I don't know if I totally agree with you, but that's certainly a fair point. Dallas State Pat did very little in the offseason, and the same can be said of Carolina, which, they've won some playoff rounds the last couple of years. A lot of prognosticators in a normal season would say they're ready to take off and maybe make a deep run. This is a very good team on paper. With a very good coach who's very Tortorella-like in Rod Brind'Amour. Your thoughts on the Carolina Hurricanes, who will always be dead to me?
Well, they're going to miss Justin Williams, who retired. He's the one that, he was the one that's behind all those, what do they call them, the storm something, storm surges, yeah, and all that, post-game victory celebrations and all that. I mean, he really kind of brought them a lot of, like, leadership and belief and confidence in themselves and just fun. And now he's gone. I don't think they played very well without him last season, and then he kind of came back either for the bubble or midway or something. I mean, they played okay. I mean, I don't know. I think they're a good team. Brind'Amour, I think, is a very good coach. He's fiery. He is not lacking for motivation, I guess you'd say, the team under him. You got to like their offensive, at least their top six. When you got Teravainen.
Right. Very good deal.
Oh, and Aho and those guys can put the puck in the net.
And they have a tandem of goalies that's worked for them.
They do, but I mean, again, it's still James Reimer and it's still, Peter Mrazek. And both of those guys have had some spotty points in their NHL careers at this point. I think Mrazek is more so the starter than Reimer. I mean, Reimer's really struggled since at times. Now, when he got there behind a pretty good defense, I think his play has picked up. But
I'm not saying they have the greatest goalies in the world, Hedge. I'm saying they have a tandem that has worked for them.
Yeah, for sure. And they're okay in their system. I mean, Dougie Hamilton is all healed up now. He's a heck of a defenseman. He's their top guy on defense. And Jakub Slavin is another really good defenseman. They have good defense as well.
They do.
I think that they are a legitimate contender, for the playoffs here, and somebody that the Jackets know really well from playing against them in the Metro Division.
Now, next, I guess we have to talk about Nashville, and a very disappointing team. As I mentioned earlier, haven't won a playoff round since they made it to the final in 2017. Ryan Johansson's been a major disappointment down there. He's beginning to look like a fat contract that weighs heavily on their cap. Matt Duchene, another former Jacket, did not have a good year last year. People are looking at those two centers as, all right, guys, if we're going to do anything this year, we're going to need you to be something close to what you're capable of being.
Yeah. Well, for sure. And then this is a team that also jettisoned Kyle Turris because he burned out or whatever there. So, and he was another guy that went down to Nashville. They, you know, David Poile, the GM, has been on a continual search for these stud centers for a long time now. I mean, going back to getting Ryan Johansson and giving up Seth Jones to the Blue Jackets to get him, you know, and Johansson, to his credit, you know, when he has, when he's motivated and he's been turned in and he's got it going, he's a very, very hard guy to stop. I mean, he is big, strong, can skate, and he's talented. But it sounds like, I don't know if it's a motivation thing. I don't know if he just kind of like, you know, lilts in and out here and there. I don't know what it is with him. But yeah, that there's a lot of disappointment from last year, you know, and they spent, you know, they were included in the 24 team return to play, the bubble, all that stuff last year, and they got housed basically and booted out of there in the first, in that qualification round, I think, wasn't it? Or was it first?
Yes. Yeah. No, they were the teams in this division, this new central division in the bubble, went 3-1 in the qualifying round. Nashville was eliminated in the qualifying round. Chicago won.
Yes, right. They beat Edmonton.
And Nashville was eliminated. And then in round one, there was a Tampa Bay Blue Jackets head-to-head. Tampa Bay and Dallas moved on and wound up meeting in the final. And the Blue Jackets, Carolina, and Chicago were eliminated in that what was the first round.
Right.
Or the post-qualifying round. I don't even know how to describe
what that is. Well, I mean, Nashville's an interesting team because they brought back Michael Granlund. He kind of had a down year as well last year, but I mean, he's motivated to prove that he's not, yeah, that he's a better player than that. He's still young. They also got Eric Halla. They signed him. He's a speedy center that they could use in the third line. And then they still have Victor Arvidsson. They still have Philip Forsberg. I mean, yeah, those guys are talented players. They still have Roman Josi. I mean, their defense is still outstanding. Roman Josi, Ryan Ellis, Mattia, yeah, Beckholm are still there. Pekka Rinne is getting, you know, up there long in the tooth as for a Predator, as you would
and
say.
He lost his job to Saros last year, and but they'll use them in tandem, I'm sure.
For sure.
Rinne is getting old. But the thing about Johansson and Duchesne is Joey's an $8 million cap hit through 24-25. Yeah. Duchesne's an $8 million cap hit through 25-26. So that is why the lights shine brightly upon them, and why when there is disappointment in Nashville, that's the first place where you look, is in the middle of the top two lines.
Yeah, they're the anchor of the lineup if they're playing well, and they're the cement shoes if they're not.
Oh, heck, you are a wordsmith. So there's Nashville. I'm dubious about Nashville. It strikes me as a team that, and who knows, geez, I mean, anything could happen this year. But I don't know if they have the hair on their chest to push through and make the playoffs in this particular division, especially when you're looking at Dallas, Carolina, Tampa Bay, and Columbus. Those are hard teams for a well-groomed team like Nashville to try and muck on through. Let's talk quickly about the Blue Jackets, who opened their season tonight in Nashville against the $8 million centerman. Hedge, we're going to talk about them, and then we'll talk about the bottom of the of this division, which is obviously where we have your Detroit and Chicago bringing up their rear here. But Blue Jackets against the Nashville Predators in Music City tonight. Welcome back, hockey fans. The 2021 season, however it's going to unfold, is at the very least underway. What's the Jackets news heading into tonight's game, Brian Hedger?
Well, Mikko Koivu is out. He did not travel here. He is he's out with COVID protocols, you know, so they won't say that whether he tested positive or anything. But because of the NHL's extensive list of protocols, it affected him. He's not here. So, and they're not They're naming names of guys who are on their COVID protocols list, but they're not saying, like, you know, this guy tested positive, that one didn't, or whatever. So he's out. He was going to center the third line with Boone Jenner, and I think Riley Nash was going to play on the right side, or maybe Emil Bemström. So instead, you're going to have Boone Jenner still going to be at left wing. They're going to try Alexander Tekstier in the middle. Like, he's been getting a look lately in Koivu's spot at center. They think that he's eventually going to be an NHL center full time. So they're going to give him that run there. And then I believe Bemström is going to be on the right there with Riley Nash bumping down to fourth line center. And I believe you're going to have Foodie and Robinson on that fourth line. And then your top two lines are what they've been all camp. Two thirds of the top line is what it was.
Why don't you run through the lines real quick here, Brian?
Yep. First line is expected to be Mikhail Grigorenko on the left, Pierre-Luc Dubois in the middle, and Oliver Bjorkstrand on the right. But look for Grigorenko to often be found on the right wing because he likes to play that side, and they'll probably flip-flop.
And look for him to be called Grigorenko by Rimmer.
Yeah, right.
The second line.
Yes. Second line is Nick Foligno on the left, and you got Max Domi in the middle, and Cam Atkinson on the right. The third line is going to be Jenner left, Texier center, and probably Bemström on the right. And then you're going to, on the bottom, you're going to have Foodie on the left. Where Robinson usually, like, they're trying Robinson out that right wing, and he had played left. But anyway, it's going to go Foodie, Nash, and Eric Robinson would be my expected line there for fourth. Defenseman is interesting that we know the top four. The top two are Werenski and Jones. Next two are Gavrikov and Savard. And then the next two, I mean, you got four guys. They kept eight defensemen, so you have four guys in the mix. I think it's going to be Delzato on the left and Kukin on the right. I think. Those guys might be flipped. They might use Harrington. The other guy is Carlson. They kept him. Because, again, you have to put, like, if they would want to put Carlson on, like, the taxi squad or something, you're going to have to expose him to waivers. And, maybe they didn't want to do that.
Ryan Murray and Marcus Nudavara were traded away to clear cap space out of fear that Pierre-Luc Dubois would get an offer sheet. They're gone, and Delzato is one of the obviously filling from within, but he's the piece from without who signed a PTO heading into camp and earned himself a contract in camp. Brian, talk about the camp he's had and how he's been received and what he can contribute. The knock on him always was that, for good or ill, rightly or wrongly, that good offensive instincts, poor in his own end. And of course, he's famed he once dumped Kate Upton for Meghan Markle. He was quite famed on Broadway there in that regard.
Tough life, isn't it? Tough life. His camp, it's hard to make an assessment because they had two live game scrimmage type things, but there wasn't a lot of defense played by anybody. There was high scoring, so it was hard to make assessments on that. You know, John Tortorella did say that basically nobody really jumped up and took, ahead of the other ones that were in that mix for the 5-6 for the third pairing. He was hoping to see two guys just basically jump out at him and be like, boom, these are our guys. And that didn't really happen. But I think that they do want to try Delzato there and see if it's going to work and see if they can. I mean, Tortorella even said, he's like, look, you're going to have mistakes. There's going to be mistakes, But, like, you know,
Tortorella's going to go crazy this year. I'm sorry. Mark my words. The over-under is Valentine's Day for me. I want to talk about Delzato a little bit more because there is this notion that that he built his game up once he left New York. that he is not the defensive liability he once was. At least that's the word on the street. Is that fair to say about, what is he, 30 years old?
He just turned 30.
Maybe reinventing himself.
Yeah, he just turned 30. I don't know if he's reinventing himself necessarily, but I think that he has learned a few things over the years. John Tortorella has stayed in touch with him the whole time, even though they had their squabbles, when they were in New York, like he has with a number of players. But like they stayed in touch. And, the reports from Anaheim last year, out of people that watched that team closely last year, pretty good on Del Zotto. They said that he was not bad. He was one of their better defensemen last year, but they're a rebuilding team, and they're trying to like play a bunch of young defensemen. And so they sat him out quite a bit. And he's mentioned that as like, that's one of the reasons he wanted to come to Columbus. I'm sure he had other PTO offers elsewhere, probably better chances, maybe even to play higher in the lineup. But in Columbus, he wants to see if they can win. He's tired of being on a rebuilding team. He wants to see if he can come in here and help these guys win.
One thing I wanted to ask you about, Brian, especially since the Jackets were a team that did hit the news wire when they held 17 players out of practice one day out of quote-unquote excessive precaution. We're now, once the regular season's out of way, is underway, which it is, the NHL requires teams to name names of players who are being held out because of COVID protocol. That's just a note. Along the same lines, Max Domi is a guy heading into the bubble with Montreal last year who was oft mentioned as someone with pre-existing conditions. Diabetes being one of them, Brian. What are his thoughts as this season gets underway outside of a bubble at the height of a pandemic?
We haven't really discussed that with him yet. But the fact that he's here and that he has not missed a single day of camp should probably tell you his feelings about it. He has type 1 diabetes. When you look at the risk factors, diabetes is in general a pretty high one, just in general. But it should be noted, and it has to be noted, that when you break it down between type 1 and type 2, there is a difference there. Type 2 is the kind that you just kind of you're not born with it. It's not a genetic thing. It's more, it just kind of develops over time in your body. And that one is typically more so of a danger with COVID that they're finding than type 1. So, and you also have to factor in that Max Domi is a professional athlete. He's in great shape otherwise, and so, I think that he's probably factored all these things in, and he hasn't missed a day of camp. And you've had all these, you had a COVID scare a little bit about protocols and caution. And then in the off season, when they had guys in town training in the off season, small groups, they had to shut the facilities down for 2 weeks because they did have what they called several players, test positive. So they had to shut it down. So I think that because he's here, he's worked through a lot of these things in his head. He had to,
Right. Well, he was diagnosed when he was 12. So he's lived with this. He knows how to live with this. I think famously the first question to his pediatrician was, can I still play hockey, when he told him he had diabetes. He also has celiac disease, which is well, simply put, a gluten allergy.
Right.
That's too generally put. But we'll keep our eye on that and hope, that he remains healthy throughout this. He's a heck of a player. He's a very good addition, and he's kind of a silver lining amid all this Pierre Luc Dubois talk we didn't mention him in terms of he wants out of town. And we'll see how that goes too. He's been playing like
playing well in camp. He's been living up to what he said he was going to do. He's going to play his butt off, and he's been doing that so far.
Okay, well, good luck to him. So that's it, Jack. It's Nashville tonight. Tune into your Fox Sports Ohio for.
We're not going to talk Blackhawks and Red Wings, hey?
Yeah, well, we have to mention them before we sign off here.
It's a different Central, isn't it, than when they were there before?
Well, you know, Chicago is in a total rebuild. I mean, they're at a lower, an earlier stage of their rebuild than Detroit is. I think that's a good way to delineate the teams.
Yeah.
Chicago was kind of held together creakily by their goaltending last year, and now they don't have any goaltending. And what you get is Malcolm Subban hung out to dry against the Tampa Bay Lightning on opening night. It's ugly. This division is considered the weakest of the four divisions, in part because it's pretty hard to find what you might describe as automatic W's in other divisions. But when you look at Chicago in particular and Detroit to a lesser degree, you can count on maybe some easier nights amid this 800-meter sprint distance run.
Right. Yeah.
Heartbreaker. Yeah. So Chicago, they're in a rebuild. That's all there is to it. Detroit is a little interesting to me, Hedge.
Me too.
They're a kind of team with some young talent and no expectations, and they can just let it all hang out. You know, there's nothing for them to lose. No one expects them to do anything.
No. Nope.
And these are babes in toyland, and they have a little wild card-y quality about them, if you will. Agreed?
Yeah, well, I agree. And they're a team that, like you said, they're a wild card, so they can just kind of let it fly. And if they happen to be in a position at the trade deadline where they're out of it, they've got some assets now that they signed in free agency that other teams might like, and they can pull from those and gain some draft picks or prospects, you know.
All right.
So they're in good spot. Or if they're in position to potentially even challenge for like a playoff spot, they can go the other direction, you know.
All right. Well, there you go. That's our Central Division preview for good or ill. And lastly, we should at least do the trade rumors thing. What is going on with Pierre-Luc Dubois? Obviously, this is not something that is in the public domain, if you will, but a lot of things get kicked around. You know, New York being New York, there was speculation that they'd be pitching for Dubois. I do Lafreniere straight up, but my sense, Brian, from the general manager last time I spoke with him, which was just a couple days ago, was that he's just going to sit.
Yep.
There's a lot of action, but he's just sitting and waiting for the right deal, and he's not going to lift a finger until he hears something that interests him.
I mean, he's done this before, so when the right deal comes along, he'll see it, he'll know it, and he'll feel it, and he'll just pull the trigger and do it. So, he's not a guy that is going to be pressured into making a deal just to make a deal because a guy's unhappy. That's not the way the Armo operates. So, you know, you better come strong if you're coming to get Pierre-Luc Dubois in a trade. I would advise that you don't come armed for with BBs.
Yeah, and the scuttlebutt is there are legit offers coming in, or at least something approaching legitimate offers that other teams realize this too. And if they're going to pitch for Dubois, they better have something that isn't stupid. So we'll see how that goes. I don't expect it to get done this year.
I have no expectations. You know, it's just whenever it happens, it happens. I think I could see it getting done this year, maybe.
I can too. I'm just saying.
I wouldn't expect it, you know, necessarily.
Yeah, I would say as 60-40, it goes to the first day of the draft.
Yeah,
that's the way I put it. Now, 40% is a very good chance that something gets done, but someone's going to have to come up with something very hefty in return. Sure. All right, that's it. So Brian at Brian Hedger is at Nashville tonight to watch the Blue Jackets with no access, but he'll be there and give you all the color of an empty arena. I'm Mike Arace. Thanks for joining us. Per usual, the man at the controls is at the Podfather 2, Patrick Flaherty. Patrick, blow us out of here. We'll talk to everyone soon.